Welcome to the Special Ed Strategist Podcast, where we strategize all things special ed. I am excited to have this conversation with you guys, to listen and seriously grab paper, some pens, coffee, whatever you need, sit back and get ready to absorb this information, coming together and collaborating, cooperating, compromising to come and find a beautiful consensus to better support the children that we serve. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. I am my mom and special educator. I have sat at both sides of that IEP table as a parent and a professional. And over the last 25 plus years, I have made it my passion and mission to help parents and professionals bridge learning gaps, access special education services, and build kick butt IEPs. If you want more tips, show us some love on social at Learning Essentials. If you are new to our podcast, give us a download, a follow, a like, or a share. Let's get ready to strategize special education style. Dr. Clark, thanks for joining us. Can you give us an introduction of who you are and a little bit about how you strategize and support our various learners?
Hi, yes. Thank you for having us, Wendy. I am a respiratory therapy clinician for over 30 years. And I went back to school and I have my PhD in higher education and leadership and administration. And currently I am a college professor and I'm the mother of two and the wife of Chris Clark Sr. But how this became a passion for me to help other children and parents and to support parents is based on my journey as a parent with my children. My son, Chris, who's with me today, this was all his idea, spearheaded from him because of his experiences as a child with the IEP in school and his journey through school. And my daughter, she had her own journey with the 504 plan. So I have been immersed into the special education, and I just want to support parents. And I want to support children to empower them to be their best and to just be confident in who they are.
I think we all want that. So I am excited to talk today and learn more on how we can better do that for our parents and for our students. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Chris, welcome and thanks for joining us. I am excited to talk with you and hear about your journey and how CASEN came to be. Can you start off by letting folks know who you are?
I am Chris Clark Jr.
Can you share with us about CASEN, what that is?
Okay. CASEN stands for Collaborative Advancement for Social and Emotional Needs. It's bringing education and social media together. And it's preparing today's kids how to properly be on social media and just preparing them for it.
So could you tell me why you wanted to create CASEN?
I wanted to create CASEN because when I was coming up on social media, I struggled a lot and I struggled a little bit socially too. And it all stems from not wanting kids to go through what I went through when I was coming up.
I love that. I have three boys myself, and it's such a new world. I did not have social media when I was a kid, and I think that probably made things easier for me. So I cannot imagine, you know, just seeing what my kids are going through and then the students that I support through Learning Essentials, where that social media element comes in. And I think it's fantastic that you and your mom got together to develop this program to support other kids, other youth, to really help make it easier for them to navigate this tricky part of social media and being social and interacting. Do you remember when you first went to mom and was like, hey, we need something, I need something? How did it come about, that conversation?
From what I recall, it was in the middle of my freshman year of college, so like the spring, I want to say. And after talking to my dad about what I possibly wanted to come up with that could help kids, after a couple of days, I went to her and was like, I just presented my idea at the time and thought it'd be cool. There was a little social media thing that the rare kids for some of these major sites, and she was on board from the beginning.
I love that. I love that. What a great mama you have. Mm-hmm. What do you think of it now? Now that you've kind of seen, well, first, how long has KSIM been around?
We've been around 5 years, but the last couple of years, we've made like a real full push of where it's at now.
And how do people find out about KSIM and find out about you guys?
They can learn more about it from our website, and you can kind of reach out to us through the website, but just been word of mouth has been like a big, or just connecting through talking to different people through different social media stuff or through LinkedIn, that's been helping us get be in front of the right people.
I think isn't that always the best things come from word of mouth, right?
Yeah.
What are you most proud of with KSIM?
One, that we're still kind of around building this, but also I've liked when we went to the community and did different camps and just it's coming. It's like kind of nice being able to be on this side of the audience instead of just being the kid in the audience that like thought something was cool, but just it's a different approach.
I love that. That is awesome. How do you see KSIM helping students?
I see it a couple different ways. One, on a social media front, like just like once they go through us, like they know like they're better prepared for it than going kind of roughly blind like I did, because I was like, all right, so my parents are on it, it's going to be all fine and perfect, but I didn't realize that, especially as I got older, if I posted my opinion, it would be I would deal with the critiques of it, but like I want that to be like that kind of, I want KSIM kind of be kind of just preparing them for, but also I kind of see it on the education side, just it could be like a good learning tool like down the road.
Can you walk us through what you do at KSIM? Like what would a student expect to experience?
They'll go through the Wellness Academy first, which teaches them social media, mental health, that sort of stuff. They'll go through different levels of that, and then once they complete the levels and everything, they'll eventually move on to our mobile app to kind of just that, like everything they were taught leads to the app. And once they go from there, they're, as long as they feel like, as long as the parents and stuff agree that they're good to go, then they'll eventually be able to be on these major sites and platforms.
Do you have any questions for me? Is there anything that I should be asking you that I haven't?
I don't think we went over the actual conversation that led to even us going to like even get even before I went to my mom, that sort of thing.
Let's do it. Let's dive in. Tell me about that.
And it all stems from a conversation I had with my dad maybe like a few days prior to talking to my mom about it. Like we between my dad and I, we had like a couple different conversations. He had asked me what I wish I had growing up that can help kids today. And I was like, just being a young college student, I was giving the I don't know answer. And then after a couple of days of just thinking about it, when I'm having that conversation, like he's like, he asked me again. And I said, it'd be cool. There was a social media platform that educated kids on how to properly be on social media. And that kind of stems from, and then, and also like give them a safe space that all stems from when I was a teenager and I was just so new to social media. And I would add people that I hardly knew or probably shouldn't have added, where I would post stuff that I kind of just, I was very loose with my thoughts or whatever. And but my dad and his friends, while I was at school or when I would get home, my dad would be like, "Hey, Chris, take this down." Or his friends would be like, "Hey, did you see what Chris posted?" And then I would get a text or call at like lunch per se from my dad, like, "Hey, take this down." And then like that protection and that like influence helped kind of helped me get a better understanding on what to do on social media. And I kind of wanted that to be kind of that, but digital, but like very safe space, but at the same time, it'd be social media, but like a protected version of social media.
That's fantastic. And there's so many kids that could benefit from that. And you're right, in terms of posting things and not really kind of thinking maybe through of who's going to see this or who am I letting on, and kind of those questions. So I love that you were able to reflect on your experience and to then turn that into a positive to say, you know what, let's guide and teach other kids so that they can be safe and still have the experience of social media.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Mom, anything else you want me to add?
No, I just am very proud of Chris. And the one thing that I tell him and that we think of his journey and his process as, I said, we were able to turn pain into passion and pain into purpose. So the challenges that he faced growing up on social media in particular, we called it, his father and his friends policed his account. And, you know, they did guide him and groom him until he became appropriate. And one of the things Chris left out was he said, other children may not have the village that I had that taught me how to become appropriate. And I want to provide that safe space and that village for the kids that don't have a village. And when he said that to me, I was all in from the beginning. I had no clue as to how I was going to create this app or what I was going to do. But one thing I'm certain about is when my children come to me with something positive, especially, and they want to do something, I'm going to find a way. And that's what I did. We found a way to make this happen. And it's unbelievable that his thought came 5 years ago, actually almost 6 years now, because it was in 2017. And it started from an idea. And what I did, I said that wasn't enough to just create an app. I didn't know how to get started with it, but I went to the literature. I went straight to Google to see what the gap was in education. And as an educator myself, I said, it has to be more. And I found that social emotional learning was a deficit among children. So what I did was I did a deep dive into social emotional learning, and I wanted to come up with an idea that would bridge social media with social emotional learning. And that's how CASEN came about. And CASEN stands for Collaborative Advancement for Social and Emotional Needs. And so everything we do brings back to social emotional learning to tie it and bridge the gap from what children are learning in school to their real lives at home.
How do you bridge that gap?
How do we bridge the gap?
Yes.
So I am super excited about the platform that we have taken, because each one of our courses. So can I just tell you the evolution of CASEN first?
Yes, please.
So the evolution of CASEN came from this idea that Chris had with building an app. So I was able to find a way to build the app through Google, just prayer in Google, and I developed something on a third-party company and to see if it had teeth or to see if it was anything. we met with the superintendent of special education in our school district, and they liked what we did and gave feedback on how we can improve and what they thought. And so we did that like three different times. And that was in 2018. 2019, we did outreach. We went into the community. We went to summer camp. We went to churches and started presenting how to do social media right. And before we even went out, we were able to partner with the office of the PA Office of Attorney Generals. And they came out with us and they taught the dangers of social media. And then we went behind them and told the children how to do social media appropriately. And then we had more places lined up for 2020, but then the pandemic happened. So during the pandemic, while we were home, I'm a professor and I teach online. So during this time, I created these courses for CASEN online. And then that was 2020. In 2021, we were able to pilot them. One was done in a high school autistic support class, and one was on Zoom. So I just wanted to tell you the evolution. And then we hired app developers to take it to a whole nother level. So that's where we are today. So we're ready, just about ready to launch. But these courses, how we bridge the gap between the classroom and home, we do it through social media platforms that the kids are already using. For example, our social emotional development course is taught through gaming. So we use the gaming platform. So the lessons that they're learning are for social emotional learning. And it starts off in person, you know, like with you and a person, but then we tie it into gaming when you're playing video games. The same tools you need in person to communicate, you need to practice online. And then we go into identifying bullying patterns, even over the gaming console, and how behaviors you may think is funny or something could be hurtful to someone else, even online. And that's how we bridge the gap with that. And when you're teaching self-awareness and social awareness, yes, it's important in person, but it's equally as important online.
How does this look for different students?
We think that this platform can work for anyone, but our primary focus is children with special needs or learning differences, because they're the more vulnerable population. And I just know that even from some of Chris's experiences in school, when there's a power imbalance or children socially aren't as fast, like Chris used to stutter. So if he was nervous and he started stuttering, then children could over talk him, and then his point would get lost or something. And that I think that help cause self-esteem issues or, you know, problems with wanting to speak up because he didn't feel empowered. Therefore, we really want to help children like that to find their voice, to feel proud and to realize they are equally as important as someone else. And that's done by building them up, finding their strengths, discovering their strengths, constantly talking and lifting them.
How is that done through your mission in CASEN in terms of continuing that empowerment of students so that they feel more fulfilled and confident outside of just reassuring them?
Because the lessons are built on self-discovery. For example, if the teacher asks about differences, and like one of the lessons is based on differences, and not only how people look different, but we have different jobs, different careers, different things we're good at. And once they look into the community and talk about the differences and everything, then we kind of bring it in. So then they talk about what their differences are and what they're good at. Some people might be good at basketball. Some might be good at drawing. Some might be good at playing an instrument. But what are you good at? And drilling home the point that neither one is better than the other, it's just different. And one thing I got from Stacey Montgomery is different is different and different is awesome.
Different is awesome.
Yeah. And so we encourage them to focus on their abilities as opposed to other people focusing on someone's disabilities. We want to empower them for what they can do and what they can do well.
That's right. What are the courses done one-on-one, or is this something that's done through a classroom setting within a school district?
Okay. Well, we have different platforms. So this is open for anyone that deals with a group of children. So if it's a psychologist, if it's a social worker, if it's a counselor, and you have three or four students or someone who fits this category that you are looking for to help strengthen them or empower them, or even if it's just social skills, you know, sometimes they may not have any other issues, but maybe they're socially, they're just lagging, or they need social confidence and things. So this is a way to help a shy child as well to come out of their shell and to be in a community with other children. Everything is guided. These are guided lessons. Each module is 6 guided lessons. Now, granted, if the instructor or the facilitator needs more time, then they can take it. If their group needs more than 45 minutes to an hour for a particular topic, now they have the freedom to do that. But we have it designed to be 45 minutes to an hour of instruction with the students.
Do we need to keep practicing the skills that are taught, or would students lose them if they don't continue to stay current?
I believe you always want to have them practice to stay current. And I think what makes us unique is that we're going to offer parallel course for the parents, so the parents can learn what the children are learning, so they can further the conversation at home, so they can strengthen them, so they know what questions to ask them to further that conversation, to keep building them up and building the tools that they need.
That's such an important concept. I know with Learning Essentials and the students that we support, we send home lesson notes and keep that collaboration and conversation open. I know we're talking about 2 different things here, but in terms of educating and empowering the parents with what the student is doing and really supporting that family system really does breed success. Where does bullying come into play, and how do you address this topic? You had kind of mentioned bullying, but I just wanted to dive deeper.
Well, whenever you have a power imbalance, it presents the opportunity for bullying. So if a child is bigger than another child, it could be that. If a child is quicker with the tongue and a child isn't as quick, it could be that. It's whatever that makes the skill set different can allow for bullying. There are different platforms for bullying. There are different levels. You have physical bullying, where we all are aware of that, where a child might hit or push or do something physical to a child. But then you have social bullying, where a child may be isolated. You have a group of children that are isolating a child. You have verbal bullying, where they're teasing and taunting and everything. And then more recently, you have this cyberbullying, where these kids are hiding behind these platforms. And unfortunately, the cyberbullying has caused a lot of anxiety, depression, and mental health issues. And that's something Chris may be able to speak to you on, because this is another reason why we're passionate about this. Chris dealt with bullying over social media, which led to anxiety and depression. And I don't want any parent to have to go through this. And fortunately, we're blessed because we have a very tight-knit family. And since Chris was, and my daughter was little, I've always communicated with them. So from the time they were children, we had open dialogue and communication. Therefore, it was easy for him to share some of his thoughts and expressions. And by no means do I think he shared them all, but he shared enough that I was able to get him help.
Chris, do you have any tips for parents that may be listening on how to become that safe space as your mom's talking about?
From like day one, have open conversations with your kids, especially about mental health, instead of just as soon as they say they're struggling, just talk, just hear them out, and just continue. Even if they may not flat out say they're struggling, maybe talk, maybe tell them that you're here to listen, even if they may want to talk about it later, that sort of thing.
And what would you say to parents that may be worried that they don't have the right words to have that conversation, or worried that they're going to say the wrong thing?
Definitely, maybe like look up the right wording, but also just kind of go, just kind of go with it. If you think like it's, just try to think of how, just also think of different ways to phrase it, but just at the end of the day, it's your child. Just talk to them how you normally talk to them, and the words will kind of provide themselves.
I love that. That's the best. How do parents monitor or become that safe space for kids, especially when it comes to cyberbullying? Because like you said, it's quiet, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're online, a parent may or may not be aware of it. So what could parents do to be a better, have a better understanding of what's taking place?
Like my parents did for me, every once in a while, they would check in and be like, how you doing on social media? And just have different, growing up, we said, like, especially as my sister and I got older, we would have different conversations with them. Like they weren't always on a case about it, but every once in a while, just be like, hey, how's it going? Just like different, having like real conversations like that is, from what I recall, always the right way to kind of go present itself.
Dr. Clark, do you have anything you want to add?
Yes, I would say first know your child. And when you're in tune with your child, you get red flags, you get signals, you get your spidey senses go up, and you know something's not right, even when they tell you they're fine. And when that happens, I think it's a fine line between pushing them and pressing them. I think it's a fine line, because you don't want to push them to the point where they shut down and they retreat, but you want to continue to engage them so they will feel comfortable to open up. And it may be that you tell them a story about you. If you notice that they're not opening up, it might be that you tell a story that happened to you at work, or something that happened to you when you were younger, or something you saw on the news, to kind of start the conversation. And then hopefully that will give them a window of opportunity to speak up and to tell you how their day went. But one of the things that happened in our home, since our children were old enough to go to school, probably even preschool, we always asked, how was your day? Regardless. And if they said good, what does good mean? What made it good? And that's what we did. And I think that's important. I remember when my son was about 9 and my daughter is almost 2 years younger, and he asked me something that she deemed was inappropriate. Like, I forget what it was. It was something to do with boys and girls, but I forget the actual conversation. But she said, oh, you can't say that to mommy. You know, you can't. And I paused her right there. I said, no. He can. He can say anything to me. And I promised my children that they could ask me or say anything to me, and I would answer them and not be upset, and we would have a discussion, because I never wanted them to feel as though they couldn't come to me and they had to go to friends for bad information, as opposed to coming to me for the truth. So my point for sharing that is, I think it's important to set that up when they're little, because when they get older, you're going to want them to come to you. And if you haven't establish that relationship, they're not going to feel comfortable.
In addition to bullying, how do we teach the functional online skills? Can you tell us more about that, you know, in terms of how a selfie can tell a predator where you are, or what pictures to post, what not to post, those kind of things?
And that's actually what we do with our social media readiness course. We do a deep dive into privacy settings, turning off the settings which will let people know where you are. Because if you do take a picture and those settings are on, even if you don't see them, someone can click on that photo and get the demographics, get where the location was, and track a child. It's very important that you don't put, we tell children, don't put your school information on there, because if a predator has your name and they know what school you go to and they know what city you live in, then it's easy for them to come and track you and find you. Who knows what else they are capable of doing. We think it's very important for children to know that their digital footprint, just like your fingerprint, people will always be able to find you, you know. And even with Snapchat, people think that they can post something and it goes away. But once you put something out there, it's there forever. And how many people who are famous, how many entertainers and people posted things years ago and it came back later, and they had to deal with the consequences of things they posted early on, and maybe they've evolved. Maybe it was true at the time and that's not how they feel now, but it doesn't matter because it was out there and people can spin it any way that they want. And I believe that we can all grow and evolve. And I think it's true for anyone that wants to, right? But when certain things are out there, people can twist it any way that they want. And they can make something from 20 years ago seem like it was yesterday, even if you've evolved from it.
Who makes the rules of social media?
I think the person with the loudest mouth and the person with the greatest following, because I think it just constantly changes and it evolves. And that's where we come into play. Because if you're not taught the right skills and you're not taught to be confident in who you are and your ability, you can fall for anything. So the important thing, social media is here to stay. It's not going anywhere. So rather than to prevent a child or try to keep a child from it, we say teach them how to do it appropriately. Teach them how to do it right, so they'll learn how to navigate, because those skills can not only be on social media, but in real life as well. You know, and it's how to navigate life. You know, so we're teaching them these social skills through social media, but those same skills are going to be applied to work and for life in general. And if you have the reality of it is, if you have a child with poor social skills, they grow up to be adults with poor social skills. So a lot of times parents would do these things if they knew themselves, but sometimes parents don't know how to teach it because they don't have it themselves. So therefore, if they go through the course with their children, gaps in their learning with this stuff, they will be empowered not only to help their children, but to help other people as well, because now they have better tools.
Chris, what are some ways that you talk to teens about improving their social interactions online?
Think wisely of who you're following and like try to stick closer to the ones that you actually may know, compared to just because so-and-so follows them, just follow them. So just go off of trust, kind of stick to what A, you're either interested in, or B, or who you know, that's my biggest advice for them.
Dr. Clark, do you want to add anything to that?
Well, I think Chris is spot on. I think the big thing is, especially when they're at that vulnerable age, like our age group that we pretty much target is like 9 to 13. And when they're impressionable like that, it's extremely important to only befriend people online that you know in person. And even when you're doing gaming consoles and you're playing these games with other people, it's better to be in communities with your friends you know in real life, people who you have that you can put a face to, because even if someone tells you they're a 10-year-old or a 9-year-old or 12-year-old online, you don't know who you're dealing with. They can put an image of anybody on there, but how many times as parents have we seen these shows where these predators are coming after these kids and thinking they're meeting kids and they're really meeting with law enforcement, you know, because they were up to no good. So I think that's the biggest thing, especially when they're younger, to drill that in, that there are a lot of dishonest people out there.
What are the top three things you want teens and students to remember as they're navigating social media? And this is to both of you guys.
My top three things are, as we said, to communicate with people you know in real life, set privacy settings on your device that don't allow people to know where you are, and parents should make sure their children's accounts are private, so just not anyone can find them or get to them, that they have to be approved and accepted. And then also your digital footprint. What you put out there is there to stay, regardless if it's an app that tell you things are going to disappear or not. Always assume someone's taking a screenshot, and do not say things to someone's online that you're not able to say to their face.
Chris, do you want to add anything?
That I'm trying to think of how to follow all that.
That's a good one. Yeah, Mom had a lot to say there. That was all excellent points.
I'll add two things, since there's no way. Stay safe, like including connecting with the right people, and just take control of who or what you may interact with, because you don't know if someone's gonna is out there for you, or they may not be there for your best interests. That's my advice.
It's also true and excellent. What can students do if they're facing difficulties in the social media world?
You want to go first?
Yeah, I can go first. Can you repeat the question one more time, please?
Absolutely. What can students do if they're facing difficulties in the social media world and they're not sure what to do?
Gotcha. Something that's kind of helped me is, I didn't learn this until very later, but for them, take breaks every once in a while from social media, either in that moment, or I've taken weeks or months off from places, and that's helped me too. But another thing, then especially that, just turn off your notifications for a while. That's another thing that's helped me. I wish I would have gotten that advice sooner, but that's like those are the best two that I can give them.
Yeah, I think he did well with that. But the one thing I would like to add for parents, if you see your child, every time you walk by, they close their device, or they don't want you to see something, or they don't use the computer in your company or their phone, like you see them, but when you walk by, they're hiding. I would want to inquire why, what's going on, what is it that's going on that they don't want you to see. And the odds are someone's being mean to them or that they're being bullied in some way and they don't want you to know. So if you suspect bullying, I would say really try to open up dialogue, have that conversation started. If you don't think they're being forthcoming with you, like I said, maybe tell them an experience you had or something you heard on TV to try to get them to open up the conversation, to start talking. Sometimes children don't want you to know things because they think they're protecting you. And this is something I went through with Chris. He was upset and I'm prying and asking him questions. And I would notice certain times he wouldn't tell me something he would tell his dad. And I said, well, how come you didn't say that to me? I was home with you before. And he said, oh, I didn't want you to worry or I didn't want you to get upset. And so I had to learn to say to him, it's not your job to protect me. It's my job to protect you. And then I would say things like, I have big shoulders. I can handle it, you know? And I think that for me, that was powerful because if I wasn't in tune with him, I would may not have discovered that. I may not have noticed that, you know, I didn't want him to have to wait 3 hours until his dad came home to say something that he held in all of that time. Because that can lead to, again, anxiety and depression. So if you do suspect it, find out first if it really is, in fact, bullying. Because it could be, if it's an isolated thing, it could just be a kid being mean. If it's repeated behavior, then that's bullying. If it is, in fact, bullying, maybe you need to get the guidance counselor involved, the teacher involved. And sometimes things are criminal. You might have to get the police involved, but don't be afraid to dig deeper and to see what resources you need to further this. Because to be honest with you, as parents, it doesn't need to just stop with us in most cases. Sometimes you can just help your child to strengthen themselves and learn how to advocate for themselves. But then there are other times when you really need help getting someone else involved.
That leads me to the next question, because we talked about top three things that you would want teens or students to remember. What are top three things that you would say for a parent or a professional? And I'm kind of leaning actually towards a professional in the event that a child is struggling, but may not have that strong connected family unit that you described that you have in your home. So what are some advice that we can give folks that are listening to better support students that may not be living in their home or in their home, either way?
I think the biggest thing that I can say for me first, and that I want like to bring awareness to children and then for other professionals, is to identify a safe adult, that safe space, because in a perfect world, your safe space and your safe adult should be your parents. Unfortunately, that's not always the case. But everyone needs to know that they're supported. Everyone needs to know that they have a trusted adult that they can go to. So I think the important thing is for professionals to help children identify who that trusted adult is in their lives. And even if, like my son's case and my daughter's case, they know they can trust their parents, but we've also identified other people that they can go to. They have grandparents, they have aunts and uncles, they have people that in the event that my son or daughter in any moment felt that they couldn't come to me with a topic, they have people that we trust, that we've identified that they can go to, and we feel confident that they will give them good advice. So I definitely think helping children identify who the trusted adults are in their life. It could be a teacher, it could be a coach, it could be their pastor, it could be a neighbor, like just someone else, you know.
As we wind down, is there anything, I know I asked you this, Chris, but for as we kind of wrap up our conversation that I didn't know enough to ask that I should have asked?
That was the trying to, because we broke down a lot, but I'm trying to, I don't know. What do you think, Mom?
The one thing I would say is there comes a time in your child's life, and I would think it's most children, that the outside voices become louder than your voice. The influences of their peers, social media, it just becomes louder. And no matter what you say to them to build them, they tend to not hear you and not value what you're saying the way that you want to be valued. Sounds like you can identify with that.
Yes, it makes me feel sad. Yeah. But it's true.
Yeah. And what I will say is keep hope alive. Where there's life, there's hope. You can always hope for a better tomorrow. And this in particular is something that I dealt with Chris. He's intelligent. He's smart. He is one of the kindest souls that I know. He is one of the most loyal people that I know. And he has all of these great attributes, all of these positive qualities. And he managed to find the one voice that said something negative, and that could take down his whole day. You could have 100 people saying something positive, the one that says something negative, and it would change his whole demeanor. It would change everything about him. And it hurt me to the core because he was lost in it. So to the parents, to the professionals, I say, when that happens, continue to still talk, continue to still love on them, continue to still say everything and hope for the day that it turns around, because it does. It starts to turn around. And I'm glad that now Chris is starting to hear my voice again and not being overshadowed by the negative voices or the influences of the outside world.
Beautiful. My final question, and Chris, you can do it separate from your mom if you want, but I always ask at the end of the podcast, if you had a billboard with one tip for parents, what would it be and why? So Chris, yours may be different than mom's. Do you want to add your two cents?
Yeah, mine is just to listen. And the reason why I said that is something my parents, even as an adult, they still listen to me, regardless if I'm talking about just every day, talking about work. They've always just listened, and it'll, she can give me advice right now, and it'll turn around my day.
Oh, I love it. Dr. Clark, do you have one?
Yes. Again, I said it already, but where there's life, there's hope. You can always hope for a better tomorrow.
I am incredibly thankful for both of you sharing your time, sharing your light and guidance with us today. I got goosebumps. Just fantastic. It really warms my heart. And the relationship, Chris, that you have with your parents is amazing. And I can only hope that my boys will say the same thing. Where can people find you?
Well, Chris, do you want to start and then I'll add on?
I'll give the business account first and then I'll mention my personal stuff as well. Our business case, our business Instagram is Kaysen_social_wellness. That's our Instagram. And if they want to reach out to either one of us, my Instagram is it's Lena, I think, but at @ChrisTheCool2, that's my Instagram, and hers Instagram is @DrMaeva. They can either reach out to us through the business Instagram, or they can reach out to our personal ones, but either way, we'll be there through that.
So our website is www.casenllc.com. That's CASENLLC.com. And we're on LinkedIn at Casen LLC, or you can follow me at Maeva Clark on LinkedIn. And I am happy to say that if you go on to the website, you can select contact us and find us there. And if you go to the library resources, we have some downloadables that can help with this conversation, because we have the Ultimate Guide to Bullying and we have How to Manage Social and Emotional Learning. So these are two documents that could further support parents with the conversation that we had today. And I am pleased to say that I have a book coming out. It's titled Help, Support for Parents of Children with Learning and Thinking Differences to Feel Confident, Capable, and Fulfilled. And in this book, I'm not coming from the perspective of an expert. I am coming from the perspective of a parent who had to navigate the IEP and the 504. So I'm very familiar with special education. And as an educator that I am, what I did was a literature review to further support the parents, to give them the tools and the places that they could go to find further information on the topics.
And we'll put all those links in the show notes. So fantastic. Thank you very much for sharing that, but I appreciate your time today. So thank you for joining us. Thank you again for strategizing with us and spending your precious time listening. If you've loved what you've heard, give us a like and a follow at Learning Essentials. Looking for free tips? Head over to learningessentialsedu.com and you can download free tips to prepare for an IEP meeting, plus bonus questions to ask. I am your host, Wendy Taylor. If you need more special education support, visit Learning Essentials, where we provide an individualized and systematic approach to supporting students with various learning needs and differences through academic coaching, educational therapy, and BrainCamp, our executive function support model. If you are a parent, I've got you covered. Head on over to learningessentialsedu.com and I can walk you through that IEP journey. Mm-hmm.